Five, four, three, two, one, zero. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Hello. Zero!
This is the Foul Mouth Podcast.
Welcome back to the Foul Mouth Podcast. I am your host, Jake Morton, along with my co-host, Denver Hall. How is it going?
I would say I'm excited, but I don't know about what. You know, duck season's over, you know? I mean, I would say it's been a minute since me and you talk, but we talk every day.
Yeah.
But we don't hang out as much because we got to go to work and make money to pay for
the family
duck season. Yeah. And, but we're back here. Would you say, looking back, did we have a successful year? Are you proud of how duck season turned out?
I think we're gonna have to go through that at the end. I think that's the end of the podcast story. Overall, it wasn't a bad year. I told you we were on our way back from undisclosed area number two.
Yep.
And we had an awful weekend. And I told you, you're like, dude, I can't believe that like we just had such a bad weekend. And I just told you straight up, I was like, hey, it's like the old joke goes, great day or bad day fishing is better than any day at work.
Yep.
And I was like, kind of the same deal, you know, bad, you know, weekend at duck hunting was better than anything else we could have done that weekend.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. But I do remember several moments of very low encouragement, you know, like there were several moments of this duck season where I was very discouraged. And one, I would say just, from another podcast to listen to, improper expectations are the key to disappointment. You know, I say it all the time. And I think that's what we have sometimes. We have improper expectations of what's going on. And I would also say, as much as we love everything we see on social media about duck hunting, I do think that social media affects hunting sometimes in a negative way on your perception of how good you are at hunting. You know, yeah. It makes you think, like, we look sometimes, we're like, golly,
They're smashing them.
We freaking suck. You know, like how many times did we say this year, dude, we just freaking suck. We are the worst duck hunters.
Man, my dad loves it when I call him, and I go, how does it feel to know that your son is the worst duck hunter in the world? And I think everyone goes through, I don't want to say a stage, because like it's not a stage. Like I think everyone every year, like you come out of some hunts and you go, we've got to be the worst. Like
yeah, we got our teeth kicked in.
There was a day where I hunted with like 15 guys or 11 guys, yeah. Something like that. I can't remember. And we did okay day. We should have ended up shooting about, you know, four or five limits. But
is that the day that y'all met? Yeah, or you were videoing?
No, I was videoing. I had the camera out, and freaking like seven or eight ducks came in, and they didn't shoot a single one out of them. Dang. And I'm like, dang.
Jake. That's the after those things is when you look, when you're kicking yourself, you know?
Well, while I was kicking myself, I sort of, because I was taking videos and pictures and stuff. I got great pictures out of that because no one shot any ducks. I got some great pictures of them all coming through the trees. But I mean, it really, I turned over and looked at my gun. It was about, 100 feet away from me.
Yeah.
I was on the other side of a hole. And then, you know, great hole. Sort of got shot chased, I'd say, the next day. Went back to the same spot. Somebody was parked in the cut. And he's like, we're going to go smash him. And I was like, all right. And actually ran into Dr. Duck while I was at that cut, too. They weren't the ones. They didn't shot chase me. They weren't the ones going to hunt that hole. And it was nice. You know, we've kind of had some interaction. Yeah. So I got to talk to him a little bit.
About shot chasing, it reminds me of when we hunted with the trio guys a couple of years ago. What was one of the things you said? It was Will and Orr, whatever.
Oh yeah, Will. It was either Will or Philip or Michael Walker.
Yeah,
I think it was one of those guys. he told me, he said, man, you know, a lot of guys, they hear us come back in here, and there's some duck killers. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's for sure some duck killers. There are some pro callers, yep, is what I would describe them
he
as.
He said, guys come back in those holes, think they're going to do exactly what they did.
He said, guys come shot chase us. They follow us, and they're going to do exactly what we do. And
he even said guys that hunt with them. You know, guys that hunt with them think, hey, they're going to come back to this. We're going to come back to this hole without these guys.
He said that those guys are going to go back there, and he goes, they may kill some ducks. He goes, but they can't do what we do.
Yeah.
And it really is like, you know, you and I have talked about it. Like, what is the difference between, like, you know, a nice group like that and stuff, and like kind of like, we don't really have much of a group, you know, we kind of float around a lot, is, you know, they are professional callers, and if they're hunting with, you know, 18 guys, all 18 of them can call, you know, and that's why they are.
And how much of a disadvantage does it put you at if it's just you and two, three guys, or you're with a kid, you know, that can't call, or, you know, you got grandpa there that ain't calling or something. Like when we take our dads, like, they're not helping call, you know, so when we have, we have four barrels, but we don't have any more ducks on the water.
Today, I went to Bass Pro today when he called me. My dad was there with me. He'll listen. He'll laugh whenever he hears this. He goes, he goes, man, I need some duck calls. We're like walking through the duck section. I said, no, you don't. And I said, that's a great way for us not to kill any ducks. And Nash Buckingham said it best. He said, the greatest tool that conservation has ever had is a duck call in the hands of an inexperienced hunter. And because, I mean, you can run ducks off so fast. Plus, I mean, it's not really, I mean, you can be bad at calling. Neither one of us are great at calling by any means, I'd say. I mean, we're decent, you know.
I'd say that we can hold our own in there, but we're definitely not going to get on stage. And,
we ain't
want to go to the store and blow in front of, you know, get hammered down on a call at you know, up at Rolling Thunder.
Just, I mean, it's just,
I think I do. I think, you know, I think to your point, though, we did this year what we wanted to do several times. Me and you said, I think going into this season, that, hey, we wanted to go, Jake and Denver, we wanted to go, us two in the timber and have a hunt, just us, where we did the scouting, we did the report, we did all the work, you know, where you can say, hey, we didn't go off of anybody, you know, like, we weren't riding any coattails, we just went off of our hard work out there, and, you know, we didn't hammer them, but we got ducks in, like, we worked ducks, we had a great time, like, those, to me, were some of our funnest hunts. Because, like, we put in the hard work for that. And I think guys, like, need to understand that, like, some of my favorite hunts this year, you know, like, we started off hot. We killed 100-something birds 3 days in the season. But those weren't my favorite hunts, you know. Like, my favorite hunts were – I mean, we still put in all the work for that opening weekend. Like, that was me and you out there scouting, our other buddies out there helping us and stuff, and Dylan and them holding down the hole. Like, we put in the work. We weren't with any other
group. It was a team effort.
Yeah, it was the Tailspin crew out there freaking smashing ducks. But when we were going out there – so I encourage guys that, like, even you see these dudes, you see 24/7 of them putting up big numbers, all these other people putting up big numbers – we still had a lot of fun even when we weren't putting up big numbers. Cause, like, that's not what it's all about. Like, we loved getting in the timber, you know, getting some floating acorns and, you know, trying to have a good time.
So this will be a little bit of a recap. So where we left off with everybody, this will be the end of season three. And we'll pick up starting season four probably next week is kind of the plan. But basically... the little bit of recap of the season, but my very favorite hunt of the whole year was the very last hunt that we went on, because both of us wore out. We'd already destroyed one boat this year.
Yeah.
Typical, if you're an avid listener to the podcast, like, boat.
We're notorious for boat troubles.
Notorious boat problems. And so we went out very last day of the season. That Monday, both of us ended up, like, not a lot to do, and an ice storm was coming, and we were, our original plan was to leave, like, late in the evening, and we were like, hey, man, let's just drive over the ramp, you know, we'll leave early in the morning.
We were going to go, before that, we had already talked about saying, hey, we're just going to end our season where we started it, at a low-key spot, where, honestly, the potential wasn't that high.
No, we were planning on going and being back in time to go back to work, is what we were thinking.
Basically calling it on a makeshift, just going to go. you know, sentimental thing. But we got it. We got a spurt of energy there and decided, you know what?
What we did. What happened was we checked the weather.
Yeah.
And man, the cold front of all cold fronts was coming through. Compared to the winter storm Ellis, it was different. But last day of the season, big snow and ice was coming in, and we said, boys, we need to go. Yeah. And so we ended up leaving. Went to a spot that we've hunted before, went and found...
Notorious us. We were like, we're going to drive down that night and like noon on the day before. You ready to go?
Yeah, I got
my truck loaded. Let's go.
We were like, going to leave from the house. Instead, we went, we didn't cheap out. We booked a hotel room and stuff. And we went over there and scouted the evening before. And we found... I don't know, 5 or 6 new holes that aren't on the map, completely new stuff.
The amount of ducks that were there in the area, that was the most ducks we'd seen all year, even with the ice storm that came through early in the year.
Yeah.
So many ducks in Arkansas that last few days. I mean, what was that, a Tuesday, and we were hunting on Wednesday, or maybe it was a Monday?
It was a Monday, we were hunting Tuesday.
Yeah, so like the amount of, we were going to a ramp where earlier in the season there would be 7 or 8 trucks in front of us no matter what the situation was, and there wasn't a soul there. We had the entire woods all to ourselves. We really did. We were hearing some shots. I think they were private. I think they were a mile away.
Yeah.
But we had the woods to ourselves.
I think in total there was probably 2-3 groups in the
entire
3,000 acre block of woods, that we were in. And I mean, honestly, going out there, we found a hole, and I mean, I remember you were like, hey, man, we've changed our strategy a little bit, and I encourage everybody, if you're new to the sport and you are trying to learn from guys, watch what other guys are doing, and it'll help you kill more ducks. And so we changed how we were setting up in holes. And you were like, hey, we need to get a little bit further off this hole. And so really we kind of hunted 2 holes at the same time. And
how we found the hole, too. We were going – we were planning on putting the boat in, and again, we found another walk-in spot.
Yeah, no.
And we were sitting there the whole time, and it was kind of opposite role. Last time we'd find a spot like this, you were like, hey, we need to hunt here. And I was like, man, no, And then in the opposite times this time, I was like, hey, let's – forget putting the boat in. Let's forget going to these other spots. We're not going to find anything better than this right here. It was narrow,
Yeah.
It was still needed more water.
It was well over a half mile walk
in
the morning, and through chest deep water, too.
But it was, it was worth the reward of getting out there. To me, that was probably one of my funnest hunts. I enjoyed everything about that hunt. I just enjoyed everything about that area. I love that area.
Yeah.
Another hunt that's probably just as fun, and it really wasn't even like an extremely successful hunt, but was that first or second day with Ethan. Out there we hunted not kind of timber, it was flooded marsh. I mean, we were standing next to trees, but it was marshland. I mean, this is in Central Flyway. It was just something unique that we don't hunt it, but we scouted. We got a tip from a buddy, said, hey, go check this area, and we did. And shout out to other hunters being friendly on, what we realized too is there's, I think Dr. Duck and them said it, there's no secrets, if you know an area, if we post a picture and you know the hole that we're in, or you know the background and go, oh, I know that place. Well, what information?
I'm not
are
giving
away?
Anything away to you. Yeah, so there's one thing on the Facebook that I hate, that people are like, oh, you're just giving spots away.
Yeah.
Well, just because you recognize that cypress tree, Joe Blow doesn't. There's a million cypress trees
the trio guy said, so what? You go back there, you kill them in that hole.
Yeah.
We're in most of the time we're in Arkansas. We're not going to broadcast our pens. Obviously, we're not going to say where we're at, but. But if you see and look, guys message us all the time, especially after our first open weekend, oh, y'all at such and such. And some people blew off and some people are like, yeah, that's where we are, And
I mean, there's plenty of guys like that I have no problem sharing pins with, actually, because we're all friends. We've shared pins with each other. And I mean, honestly, like, you know, that if I'm trading you, I'm giving you information, it's because I'm expecting you to trade information back to me too.
Yeah. And that's, you know, and you get a vibe from people who aren't going to tell you anything. And kind of not, you know, whatever, you want to be like that, that's fine. But I think it's bad for the sport. I really see a thing all the time, and you see it too, is this like supposedly unwritten rule that, hey, if you take somebody to a spot, that person should never go back to that spot without you, you know, or they should never bring anybody else to that spot. And, and I just think that that's just, it's greedy and it's selfish and it's not what the sport's about. Like, we're, you know, we take, like, I get the fact of, like, don't try to cut me out of something, you know, but like, if I tell you somewhere, like, we had, we, you know, introduced Drake and Brentley to some new spots this year, our buddies, and I'm not giving some parameters of rules on that. That's my spot. No. That's public land. It's been there for forever.
Shout out to Drake and Bentley. We hunted with them the very last day of the season. Had a great hunt. Probably one of the best hunts of the season, I'd say. Yeah. Just given, like I said, it was my favorite hunt of the season. Walking through there, we played the wind perfectly. I told you, I said, this is what's going to happen. I said, those birds are going to swoop down right there.
Yeah.
I said, and they're going to turn this way. They'll catch the wind. They're going to land right in the hole. And, man, I know you couldn't see it because we were fiddling with our guns on the first volley.
Oh, I saw they were, I saw them right in our face. Yeah, I
saw them right in our face. Could have reached out and grabbed them.
I think when I was slinging the shells that weren't firing out of my gun, they were hitting the ducks, you know. but speaking of that, that brings us to, you know, this shotgun shell. This may not be the perfect time to talk about, but I think we definitely need to have an episode focused on shotgun shells.
Yeah.
And what should you use? We've been very loyal to a brand, Migra. We've been open about it. We're not, again, we don't have any sponsorships as of today, you know, so like what we use, we spend our own money on, we believe in it. And we've been big believers of Migra for the past 2.5 seasons, I would say. And not that we're not anymore, but we had several occasions this season. We had gun malfunctions, and we're starting to think that it's maybe ammo malfunctions and not gun malfunctions.
I'll tell you this.
Don't know. I'm not going to tag
the Benelli. The Benelli has
been
it shot
flawless.
Everything I've put through it.
Has been. I had a
with the exception of a couple.
Well, you know, modes. Case in point, I had my brand new shotgun out there, like never had a speck of dust in it. Never, I mean, I think that was the first time I was using it. You know, maybe I used it another. I don't know if I did.
Yeah, you used it that weekend when we hung with Cliff.
Okay. Well.
So you fired it three times.
Fired it three times. You know. So like, I don't buy it. I did throw the Ken in there immediately after opening up my gun chamber and lighting my lighter in there for 20 seconds. I don't know if that would have melted, you know, anything. Who knows if we even had the fire on the. So I don't know. I'm just saying we're going to have a podcast about shotgun shells.
So you, the viewer, send us DMs on Instagram, or the listener. And send us DMs on Instagram. Let us know what shotgun ammo you prefer. Apex, Browning, Winchester, Federal.
Let's be realistic, though. Let's narrow it down. We have our eyes set on Kent or Apex.
Yeah.
So that's really... You're not going to get in Browning. You're not going to Winchester. We've already said it. Like, I looked at Kent
today.
This year because, shout out to Rolling Thunder, I won a case of shells at the Rolling Thunder golf event. So that was cool, and I got to shoot a lot of those shells this year. And I tell you, they had a freaking kick to them. Like,
because they were shooting BBs.
Yeah, but does that make the gun kick harder because it's got BBs?
I don't know.
I don't understand that, but we need to go get a box. Apex has this box that comes with 10 shells. It's like Z1 with some TSS. It's 9 shot. I don't understand it, but I think the box is like $70.
Do you rather shoot TSS or Bismuth?
I don't know. I don't know. Like,
here's the other thing.
Does it matter in the timber? I vote no. Let me tell you why. We were in there in the timber, me and you both shooting Benellis, both having expensive ammo in our guns, and these ducks come literally flapping in our face. We can feel the wings, you know, right in our freaking beard hair.
And what do me and you do? You don't take the – we're both shooting Super Black Eagles. You don't take your gun off safety because you're shooting the gun you weren't used to. Mine didn't fire.
I will
and
say –
Bentley with a single shot 20 gauge.
A youth model 20 gauge.
From 1987 fires one shot and shoots the one duck he shot at and was like, what's up? And he was upset because he was apologetic.
He was apologetic because he shot over our head. And I was like, I wish you would have shot more. In my defense, I'm used to shooting the Nova, which is my pump Benelli, yeah. And the safety is in front of the trigger, and versus on the Super Black Eagle, it's behind. And so I thought that this is not good gun safety. I thought I had turned the safety off already, like on the gun itself, and I just leaned it up against the tree with the safety off. But actually, the safety was on, so I pulled it up to fire.
And you turned it back off.
And I turned it back off, and nothing was happening. And I was like, here's the thing. If I had shot that duck that was right in front of me, right then, his head would have been separated from his body.
So to answer the question is most of the
he
time...
He was as close to me as I am to you right now.
Most of the time, if you're shooting how you're supposed to be shooting, we're not tree-topping, doing all this other stuff, which is another topic for another day. But I think, I don't think the shot matters that much in the woods. If we're out hunting a rice
field...
So
you think you could hunt with a 20-gauge in the timber, no problem?
100%.
Helms is...
Yes, I think 20 gauge, I think you need to be a good shot. You know, we clearly see a lot of guys that are bad shots, but you need to be a good shot. You need to not wound birds. I do think the overuse of 20 gauges is increasing the number of, like, just wounded ducks. Don't know what that really matters. You know, I feel sorry for them, but, like, I don't think it's, like, affecting the population because what it would matter if they killed it or if it just flies off wounded. Obviously, you could take a humanity perspective on that, but I'm not. But, you know, it was either dead or it's going to die 2 days from now. You're just not going to get to cut the meat
off. It's just going to suffer a little bit.
Yeah. So I do think guys are wounding more with 20 gauges, but I want a 20 gauge. Wouldn't be my daily use gun, but I would like to take it out every now and then.
Yeah. So, typical fashion with us, let's move back into the recap.
But let's go back to what I was emphasizing on. Also, one of my favorite hunts was with Ethan. We didn't really get to talk about it. I don't know if we talked about it while we were there.
We were. But 20 birds.
Yeah, we had, went to a spot that we scouted, hard as heck to get to. We actually had to cross over onto private land to get to it, and we did get permission from the landowner to get to their land, or to walk through their, cow pastures to get to it. And Ethan really hadn't experienced anything like this, really hadn't hunted timber at all. And so we're in there, we are tucked up to some trees. You know, we were like, ducks are going to come right here. We had the drone footage, we're like, pinpointing accuracy, like this is where it's gonna happen. And we sat up right there. It was really kind of hard to set up because we didn't have trees close enough. And yeah, that to build the picture for everybody, that it worked out perfectly. Like one or two started to show up. They weren't coming. They weren't landing yet.
And this is like pre-shooting light.
Yeah, 10 minutes up before.
Like shooting light was like 6:35. 6:25 ducks started showing up, and we're working them. And yeah. Ethan
it probably lasted. I mean, it may have been close, but by the time it took a few minutes. We had to work.
Shooting light already started.
Yeah, and so we're working these birds. And, it was a 7-minute ordeal probably of just a show of mallards just keep on showing up. It wasn't 100, but it was 20.
And we're just sitting there going,
just working these. And Ethan's like just scratching at, just biting at the bit. We're all like anxious, but it was like, man, we got to wait.
Yeah,
I think we had one or two trickle in, but we still got 15 up in the air. Like we're like, man, these are gonna commit because where we were was so off the beaten path. This is like when we got the experience of hunting farm ponds and these creeks and these little back bayous. It's like when the ducks come there, they have no expectation of anybody being there at all. Like they're totally. And so these ducks didn't expect us to be there, and we was total surprise. And they worked us, and they worked us.
Sneak
and,
attack.
Yeah, and we waited for the whole wad to come in. And we lit them up, and that was so much fun.
It was.
And like Ethan's saying, he's like, man, like the patience it took to wait for that group. But the reward, the reward
it pays
the
off.
Pays
me,
off, Like we could have shot a couple when they first came in, but we didn't.
I remember he told me immediately after, he was like, I just can't believe that y'all could just let them, you know, be that patient. And I go, well, first off, I'm not shooting before shooting light.
Yeah. Well, some of them were, you know, like normal, you know, you get the first one or two lead ducks come and land.
Yeah.
And you're still waiting. They may get up, but hey, don't, you know, don't.
Yeah. Freak well, out. There's like, no the rest reason. Coming, there's, you know? There's 20 birds in the air.
Yep.
Dude, there was no reason for us to educate 18 of them just for two ducks.
No.
And you know, it was an experience out there because that's typically where we were.
And,
we like, moved to a place where we don't, like, we shoot mallards out there, but we moved to a spot where we wanted to shoot only mallards
are coming there.
Yes.
And they kept on trickling in all morning. We were a little bit too far off from the spot. I mean,
we could have done significantly better than what we did.
Yeah, so I mean, we the first time hunting the spot. So when we changed how we set up after that first group, and we continued to kill more. And you know, that was so much fun because I remember that one mallard. We were calling, and we were deeper in the woods, almost in like 2 inches of water, and we were off our decoys, and they were just trying to come in. Like, they were coming to the call, not to the decoys. Like, yeah. It's so fascinating to see, and like, and just, that's just so much fun. What, are you a mallard pierced?
We're turning into mallard pierced.
We want to be. Mallard pierced, we went in so head first into being a mallard pierced one weekend, and we passed a million canvasbacks,
the king,
and a million, you know, gray ducks and all these other ducks.
We passed up so many. We passed up teal. We passed up everything.
Because we were determined to shoot
mallards.
And
we were determined to shoot mallards. Like we had ducks land at our feet.
Yeah, and we left just, with our hat in our hands. We didn't shoot anything. And we were so – that was the biggest weekend. That was the biggest, most discouraged.
Well, that's what – you know, we talked about, and I told you this. I said when we go to that spot, that's the spot we frequent some, is I go, we go there, we don't have the luxury of being a mallard pierce there. You know, we're here to shoot ducks, and that's how it is.
But
now,
devil's advocate, here's the thing. Before the boat problem – we were starting to discover where the mallards were.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, okay, if we're going to come over here, like, you go hunt other places that aren't Arkansas, you got to, you know, broaden your horizon of how you hunt. You know, you got to switch it up because it's different. You know, birds are going places that they would never go in Arkansas.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the boat. Quick recap of the boat incident is we are hunting a place called the cow field. Nobody knows what it is, but we call it the cow pasture, and because it's literally a cow pasture. And cool spot. We're literally this where this tree is just fallen. Literally, we're hunting next to
it's
flooded
a
cattle
dude.
Gate.
It's a locust tree, by the way. Yep. Is the reason why I had to buy new waders.
Well, there's many reasons for that, but so we're hunting this cool little spot again. Total surprise when we kill the ducks. They did not expect us to be there because we're hiding in an open. You know, it's totally open. Yeah. There's just one fallen tree. Anyways, I was like, hey guys, let's not make the mistake of hunting all afternoon and not scouting for the next day. And so I said, I'm gonna go check this spot. I know it's stumpy. I'm gonna go back there. A boat was running immaculate. I was getting 45 miles an hour on my boat with a new prop. So I left. My phone was about to die.
You're leaving out the key part. No, what he said about is, he said, hey, my phone's about to die. And we said, we've got two boats, right? And we're probably 6.5 miles from the house there. And the spot that you were going to check was 5 or 6 miles from the house.
Yep.
And, man, sun goes down.
But you requested for me to get this.
Yes. He said, hey, my phone's going to die. I said, hey, I got a phone charger in my bag if you want to take it. Honestly, you could have just taken the cord because you could have charged it on the freaking boat.
My boat has a phone charger built in.
Yes. And so
didn't take it.
So
didn't need it.
Me and E hunt until shooting time's over.
No, but what did I tell you before I left?
Oh,
I
said, he said, if it gets dark, like real dark, then come look for me. And so me
that was playing in my head, dude, the whole time I was stranded. I was like, God, I gotta wait till it's pitch dark.
Here's the thing. This is our buddy Ethan was with us, and he does not hunt in boats often.
Yep.
And so
where's his life jacket every time?
Dude, where's his life jacket all the time? Well, I told him to sit in the front of my boat.
Yep.
But I mostly told him that because I wanted him out of my way. And he's gonna listen to this and be like, oh, is that why? And I said, hey, I said, why don't you sit in the bottom of the boat up front and we'll ride back? Dude, we were hitting 3 foot swells. And I was like having to like really play with the motor to make sure, you know, hey, you know, we're going to go up this wave. I'm going to gas it so we can get over the next one without dipping the bow. I dipped the bow. He got soaked. And we got back and Ethan goes, man, that wasn't, you know, that wasn't a bad ride at all. And I thought he was being sarcastic.
Yeah.
And he, and I was like, dude, that was awful. And he was like, no, it wasn't. I was like, you deserve your sea legs. After
I thought
that.
I saw y'all go ride home because I could see, you know, the snake,
you see the
snake,
the snake
tubes.
You
know? Dude, I probably saw that as I was putting,
it was,
you know, back.
So, so choppy.
Yeah. Well, that's part like of the reason why it was taking me so long. So while I was out, I went scouting back down this deep, long creek, goes for miles. And I was pre-warned that it was stumpy. I'd been back there before. I knew it was stumpy.
Yeah, last time me and you went out there, we were just jumping.
Yeah, and so like, and it paled in comparison to the stumpiness of where we hunted that previous morning, where, you know, a lot of these places are, you know, areas that get flooded once and stay flooded forever. And so the trees fall and it just leaves all these stumps hidden under the water. And so we're hitting stump after stump. And I'm going putting idle speed. Well, I go over probably, no lie, 150 to 200 plus stumps for the day. The problem was earlier in the season, Jake was backing up the boat as I instructed, and the skeg got knocked on.
Yeah, I like that you threw it out as I instructed because it was not my fault that the skeg got knocked.
It wasn't his fault. We were putting in when there wasn't enough water to put in.
There wasn't a boat ramp.
There wasn't a boat ramp. We were on the freaking,
we basically,
you know,
put in
on a dike.
You know, we basically put in on limestone rocks.
Yes, exactly. What happened, because the skeg hit the rock backing it up and it broke the skeg.
Yes.
So therefore the skeg continued to get damaged, and let me tell you a little secret, guys, the skeg is there to protect your prop and the prop shaft. And so long story short, as I'm exiting this creek, I'd gone 3 miles in, 3 miles back, found hundreds of greenheads.
Of millards
all through there. I'm like, guys, we're going to freaking smash them in the morning. And I'm pulling out. It's almost dark.
It would have been real cool if you could have texted us and told us that.
It was on my phone. Had already died. And, you know, I was just chilling, having a good time. Like, I was in my zone. No phone. Scouting mallard. Sun's going down by myself. Or maybe the dog. You know, Elle was probably with me. And I'm riding out of there. And as I am, I go over one last stump. Must have been a huge oak tree. And it just kind of get hung on it. Didn't even notice anything. And I end up taking off. And I get about 20 yards and just I'd like lose power. And yeah, I guess I thought the prop had fallen off, no lie. But the prop shaft, you know, long story short, the prop shaft bent. And
but this is where the fun part of the story starts.
Yeah, the prop shaft bent. So you literally, with a bent prop shaft, you can't get any speed whatsoever. So yeah. I'm literally going less than idle speed.
So I take Ethan back to the house. It's about 150 yards up to the house or whatever. Yeah. And he gets out. And but it's getting pretty dark. And I said, man, I'm going to wait. I was just going to wait. I wanted to hear the report. And so I go, well, you know, I'll fill the boat up with gas while I'm here. So I fill the boat up with gas. I'm standing in the water. And all of a sudden, you know, it's pitch dark. And I go, you know, he didn't call me or anything. Obviously, his phone's dead. And so here's a tip for everybody. If you got a guy that you hunt with all the time, go ahead and let him know your location.
Yeah.
Like on Find My iPhone, because it would not, you and I use it way more than just hunting to check where we are and stuff. But
it's life-saving. So yes, you were able to look and see where I was previously before my phone died.
I pulled it up and I clicked on your name, and it pulls up a 3 mile radius circle, and it says Denver is somewhere in the circle. And I go, well, that doesn't help.
I at least gave you the right. The worst case would have been, I mean, here's the truth, and you should do this for just safety precautions when you're hunting by yourself or scouting by yourself, is let people know where you're going. Let people know when you're going to get back.
And share your location.
And so, like, at least you knew. That's why I wasn't concerned.
I know that place like the back of my hand.
Yeah, you knew where I was going. Me and you were both on the same page enough to, like, I know the route that he would think that to take to come over here and check.
Yeah.
Because there's, like, four routes to go home, you know, and, like, all are different miles, you know. So, like, I was like, he's going to take this route. You must have known he's going to take this route.
And so I go out to the channel and I see two boats coming behind me, and I turn around and I go, well, I'll stop and wait, because I knew you'd have your green lights on and stuff, and both of them went right past the house. And I go, well, that's not him. And so I went back to the house again really fast just to check and make sure that you like hadn't snuck past me somehow. And so I go, he is lost somewhere. And so I had to go find him, and it was about 4 miles to get over there. And there was like there was one point where I realized, because you had left your blind bag.
Yeah.
And I go, he doesn't have a cell phone. He has no cell phone light. He has no headlamp because his headlamp's in his blind bag. And I go, because he was in a creek area, yeah. And I go, I guess I'm just going to pull in the creek and shut off the motor and just be like, Denver.
I was thinking that. I was thinking, man, if your boat lost total power, you'd be out there in the dark with no, like, in that
pitch
situation.
Black.
You wouldn't have been, because I think about this all the time. If one of us falls in the water, you're not going to be able to see
it's
that.
So dark.
You're not going to be able to see him. I mean, my boat was still functioning. Besides, it just couldn't go very fast.
Yeah.
But it was funny, like, to wrap, did not spend the whole podcast talking about that. I was, I saw you coming, and then I think you'd stop, you know, thinking I'm going to catch up to you. And I just sit there, and I was kind of like, I'm just going to make this real awkward for some reason. And he pulls up to me, and I don't say a word. And he just pulls up and he's like,
what are you doing?
And well, I was like, hey.
Because of where you were, I was like, I go, what is he doing?
Just in the middle of the freaking
lake.
And
there was one point where I was pulling up because I was like, okay, obviously something's wrong with the boat if you're still sitting there, right? And like a wave like lapped over the side of the boat, and I could only see you with the green snake tubes on.
Yeah.
And oh, by the way, shout out to the guys that you kept flashing your lights at that didn't stop and help you. And you know what? I'm just going to say it. We, you know, no profanity on this podcast, but F those guys. Okay, if you don't stop and help someone that's flashing your lights at you in the dark
well,
is one.
Here's
thing.
The thing: warning, I think that they were hunting an area that was closed because some areas are closed on certain days, mm-hmm. And they came with no lights on. I almost didn't see them. They took their it was pitch dark when they left. They had no lights on their boat. I could just see a reflection of, you know, just see their silhouette, and they're leaving this area where that's closed on the day that we were there. And I was like, man, I think those guys, and they went across to one of the sketchy boat ramps, pulled their boat out. I never saw the truck lights turn on. Like, I saw the brake lights at one point, but never turned their headlights on.
So
I think they were hiding something.
That's sketchy. But I thought the boat was sinking. Like, I thought your boat was sticking halfway out of the water for a second.
Pulling a Trip Hodges out there.
So I towed Denver back 4.5 miles to the boat ramp.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
I told him, I said, Jake, remember, I don't have brakes.
And I blew him off. And I was like, yeah.
I was like, what a dumb thing
to say to me. And I will say, it was my fault because I didn't follow my own lines that I have out there. You know, we're like Top Gun out there flying with the GPS. And I hit a sandbar, and my boat stopped, and Denver's boat didn't stop. And my fiberglass cowling cover on my Mercury is toast.
Yep.
And it's actually not that bad. I think I can fix it.
Yeah.
I'm going to buy another one. But
so that's where the
so,
boat died.
So the Havoc ended. Done. For yeah, the season. Right it then. Was end right there. So the next day we had two options.
And I would say the Havoc was done for the season, and so were our spirits.
Yes.
It sank the spirits
So we had two options for the next day. And this is where being smart came into play.
Yep.
Is Denver goes, man, if we go back in there, we're going to smash them. And I had already been hunting for 6 or 7 days at this point. I was toast. Yep. Like, and it's not. Like I was hunting morning and afternoon every day and scouting and putting, I mean, I probably drove 80 or 90 miles that week in the boat. And so I was like, man, if we go back there, I said, we can't risk my boat now.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, my boat's the only boat we have to make it through the rest of the season. We still have 20 or 30 days left of the season. And so we ended up hunting this farm pond, and total different experience. Hunted somebody's private land, didn't have permission. Not just kidding. We did have permission,
but we were a little sketched out by the way because we didn't. It was permission that somebody else gave.
Yeah,
us.
We had secondhand permission basically, and which was fine. You know, we ended up having a decent day. It was fun. I ended up getting a migraine mid hunt, and I just said, boys, I gotta go get in the truck.
Yep.
And so I took a nap the rest of the day.
Yep.
Which was good because I had to drive all the way back to Memphis, and
but it was a good weekend. You know, we had to persevere. You know, we came back and really, I didn't really hunt much after that. Really, I think we went a few times. We had the freeze. No, the freeze was prior to that. But I think we went over. And
I don't know how many more times.
I don't even
you
really
did
know
after that.
You know, I was kind of discouraged a little bit. You know, but
I hunted.
Yeah, but you know. overall, I would say the recap of the season, was happy with it. We started off
We hit the river after that. We hit the Mississippi after that.
We did,
because
Mississippi was going up. And went. Oh, yeah. I'm trying to even. Okay, yeah. Yeah, we did. We went out there.
This is why you keep a journal, people.
It was crowded.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Once again, another screw those guys. Is these guys at a 4-wide boat ramp asked us if we were going to move our truck when we were like literally on the side of the boat ramp.
Yeah. And we typically park on this boat ramp.
Yeah. Yeah. Like we usually park on the boat ramp because no one's there. And and he yelled at us pre-morning. And I said, boy, I really hope that guy runs out of gas out there, because I'll toss him this freaking paddle and say, see you later, because I paddled back.
We got to get our truck off the ramp. Dude.
Yeah. And,
but yeah, that, you know, it was surprising. We saw more birds than we were expecting. They took our spot that we were wanting to get. Or actually, the spot that we wanted to get just wasn't right yet. You know, it's too grown up. The backup spots where they get, I feel like they should have done better than what I heard that they did. And we ended up getting a spot that wasn't ideal, but we worked, you know, we worked a few birds. You know, we had a good time.
We had a couple opportunities that we weren't expecting.
Yep.
And so we didn't get to capitalize
but
on them.
But this year, according to the 2023-2024 Farmer's Almanac, this is going to be a flood year. Just kidding. I hadn't read the Farmer's Almanac. But it definitely,
the grin on my face. Yeah.
But so. this is going to be a flood year. So looking forward, you know, probably running out of time, but, you know, we're taking the boats, you know, we're getting worked on, you know, you're getting worked on to yours. I got to get mine fixed. I was really hell bent. I want to put this out there. I was hell bent on switching to mud motor after I tore my boat up. And, since then, since we've got,
I talked you into a mud motor and then I talked you out of one.
And then we started getting back into, Arkansas style, boat navigation. And we're like, you know what? If you have a motor, I don't care. Show me the guy. I have a really fast mud motor, and you're gonna get smoked by guys with not even that fast of outboards. You know, like here's the thing: my boat's huge, 1756, big for, you know, public land flooded timber hunting.
Yeah,
it's a big boat.
Pirate ship.
Yeah, it's not big.
They're river
big
cruise.
Waters, you know, or any of those other type of places. But it's a big boat. It's a heavy boat. I was getting 45 with the Mercury 60. Like, I'm happy with that. And that's not even a custom prop. So I think I get a custom prop.
He was a Chinese prop.
Chinese Amazon special. So, you know.
I think we'll go ahead and wrap up the podcast. We'll take the last little bit of the podcast. What is the current state of public land hunting in Arkansas?
Some people would say that it's you know, it's nothing like what it was in the 80s.
I hate that. I hate it when people say that.
And, you know, these peak numbers. But still, I want to branch off this briefly without going on a big rant. Is I don't understand where these duck numbers are coming from. I understand where the surveys. I don't understand where the death toll of duck numbers is coming from, because me and you have never given our true number. Most of these guys have never given
our
true number.
I don't want it to, like, it asks us how many ducks we kill.
15 and, plus. And,
yeah, it says, well, it goes up to 30. It says 30 plus.
Yeah.
Well, I've shot 30 plus every season. Like, how do you know that,
you counting,
like,
my ducks,
like,
or everybody else's in the group?
Yeah,
ducks?
You count so, everybody's
so
ducks.
That's like, a question on that, but what I say is no. There's no better place to duck hunt than Arkansas. It's the Arkansas, when it has water, has more duck habitat than any state in the country.
You want to pull up Brooks Tinsley's podcast?
I want to pull up, go listen to Brooks Tinsley's podcast. And, you know, we've had so many people debate about resting areas versus not. But when we went over to Arkansas that last week and things are freezing up and it's freaking cold and there's water everywhere, there's mallards in every nook and cranny.
I believe if you went to Arkansas, East Arkansas, on the very last day of the season this year, and you killed zero ducks, maybe time to hang it up.
Yeah.
I mean, it was so like there was like we, the next day or that day, that's why originally we were going to hunt just me and you.
Yeah.
And I said, we've been trying to hunt with Drake and Bentley from Pearl and Ain't Easy for a while. Yep. We're friends with them. And I said, man, let's call them. And they ended up driving 3 hours.
And they had just been hunting. They'd just been on a 9-day binger. They'd slept in their truck 7 or 8 or 9 days
in a row. Yeah.
No, I think 7 of the 9 days they slept in the truck, 2 days they slept in the boat. dedication. Dedication.
they ended up driving over and hunting with us.
We called them. We said, hey, and I sent them a video.
I said, boys, these ducks ain't gonna smash themselves.
He said, is this an invite? And we said, yeah, come on. Yeah, like, we
walked out of the woods that morning, and I said, there ain't no way we're not killing ducks tomorrow.
No,
there was no way that we.
It was the perfect storm of duck hunting. We had very little pressure, very little competition. A ton of ducks.
Good hole.
And a lot of water.
Yes.
And so it was perfect. And we saw so many birds flying that morning. We had our pick. I mean, the only downside was it was late season, and the birds are stubborn. And they'd seen, you know, when you get late season in Arkansas, or really anywhere on the south, the ducks have been around the block. You know, they've seen it. Like, I would love to know the percentage of how many ducks have been called at and shot at, you know, or seen shots. Like, it's
every single
really
one of them,
high,
dude.
You know, like, especially 92, especially the ones hanging 92%. Around these WMAs. Like, if ducks hang, you know, are resting at a resting area near a WMA, and they're constantly flying over the timber day after day, like, you look at all these, you know, migration reports, those ducks have to be getting called at and or shot at daily, you know, weekly, if not daily, you know. So, like, when you get late season, they're harder to kill.
Yeah.
You know, even those more birds are harder to kill.
I would say Arkansas public land duck hunting is alive and well.
Yeah.
And it is thriving. There are some bad apples out there.
Yeah.
Now, here's what I think. I think Arkansas public land duck hunting itself is fine. I think that there are some problematic hunters. I think there's some guys out there causing problems for the rest of us. There's guys out there that aren't doing it right, or they're not treating other guys right and stuff. And I think, you know, that's a major issue. But
here's a hot topic question for you. Have you met more troublemaking locals or troublemaking
oozers
out of oozers?
Oozers. The oozers, obviously we're oozers, like without doubt. Like, I have no problem saying that. I mean, it's true. And every local we've ever met, nicest people.
Yeah.
Hey, we give you a shirt off your back. Hey, if you need us to pull you in, we'll pull you in. And stuff. The freaking oozers. Okay. They're the problem. Like, and I don't want to say they're the problem. No, they're the meaner guys and stuff. I've never run to any locals in Arkansas that I've had any issues with. The oozers are always the ones coming up there wanting to get in fights and stuff. Now, I think a lot of that has to do with how many days we're limited to on the WMAs. AGFC, if you're listening to this podcast, this is a message for you. You should let us pick our own dang days, okay?
Well,
we're sick and tired.
And spread it out.
Well, yeah, spread it out. Yeah, we're so dang tired. There's no reason for us to have just 30 days on the WMAs and those 30 days be set by AGFC. I love AGFC guys. I've met a lot of them and stuff. They're all super nice, but they are not with the program. They don't understand, like, what it's doing. It's creating so much more pressure on the ducks. It is insane. And it's creating more pressure on people, which leads to fights, which leads to problems, and leads to, you know, less people duck hunting because they're like, man, I don't want to get in this
anymore.
They
don't want to get in the crowd. Yeah, there's no doubt that Arkansas Game and Fish needs to do something about consolidating the duck hunters to isolated locations because of the fact that they are closing. You know, I don't know if majority of the duck hunters in Arkansas are out of state. They may be, I don't know. But on public land, when we're not allowed to go to certain locations,
it's
it
makes insane.
The other areas insanely crowded.
We
saw a boat
went
ramp
to a boat
with
ramp with 150 trucks. 150. Yeah. I've got a video of it. And it was utterly insane what was going on and stuff. There's plenty of space out there.
Yeah.
Like, it was a huge NWR and stuff.
But how much of that would not have been a problem? We wouldn't have had the problem.
Yes.
If we wouldn't have been, well, you know, we're down to a handful of options. If you want to duck hunt when the WMAs are closed, we're forcing all of us to be right on top of each other.
Yes.
It makes these other WMAs wide open. We've talked to locals that hunt places that are extremely crowded when we're allowed to go, and says, man, sometimes I'm the only truck there.
Yes. I think.
What sense does that make?
I think that. They're also, I mean, some of those days are a total wash.
Yeah.
Dude, like last year, there was 10 days where we could have hunted WMAs. It was 75 degrees.
Yeah.
You know, I ended up having COVID, so we ended up not going anyways.
But there's no water or whatever.
Yeah.
So
it's just like, it's a wash for those days anyways. Yeah. And we're like, okay, well, there's 10 days of our season, like, gone.
Yeah.
And so AGFC needs to do something about that. Hands down, you know, y'all are making regulations for everything else. At least, you know, everybody has a bad taste in their mouth. mouth about the muffler situation, not being able to run ported motors and stuff next year. That's fine. I get all that. I understand like what they're trying to do, but they're only creating problems by consolidating all of us for 30 days a year. And it's not helping anything. It's not helping the pressure on the Ducks. If anything, we put so much pressure on the Ducks that it's affecting the other, 30 days of the year that we can't go and hunt there.
Yeah.
And so it's
they've created the lines, they've created the 4 a.m. boat races.
They've created people sleeping in their trucks for days.
Yeah, sleeping in the whole, that. I mean, I get it. Like, you got to regulate it somehow.
Well, that's fine. I would pay more money for my license if I got to choose the days that I got to go. If they were like, hey, if they even told me you can only hunt WMAs for 20 days, but you get to pick the 20 days, I'd take that every time.
What if you just had 30 days in general, any WMA or regular place? I mean, I still think the number's too high because most guys weren't hunting 30 days. How many guys do we run into that hunted six? Coming from 1,000 miles away, But I think we could use a whole nother podcast to go in on AGFC or to go in on rules and regulations. I mean, we like them all.
They're going to
go back and delete the podcast now.
Yeah, they're going to go delete the podcast. I've talked to them slightly. I would like to get Austin on the podcast, Austin Booth, director of the AGFC, and talk to him about it, see what, I'm not going to, fight him on the podcast. You know what? Boxing match, me versus Austin Booth. No, I would like to have him on the podcast directly, sit down in person, just have a conversation about it.
But maybe he could say, hey, this is what we
I want to know the rationale.
Maybe they have a policy about why they have
I want to know the rationale behind it.
The duck hunters want answers that specifically, this isn't a private guy situation. The public land duck hunters want answers. Why are we limited to 30 days on WMAs in Arkansas? We would like to know. We want to know. If you could come out with a reason that would make me think, man, that's better for the duck hunting community, that's better for the ducks, it's better for the migration, I'll say, you know what, you're right. But
absolutely,
all of us, we spend a lot of time in the woods. We spend a lot of times talking to duck hunters, a lot of times talking about duck hunting and studying duck hunting, doing everything. Obviously, it's not our full-time jobs, but it's our passion. So I think we feel the pain of it. So we ask, we want to see what AGFC.
Well, here's what's interesting to me is I've talked to locals that are like, man, that's stupid. I don't know why they do that.
Yeah.
Right? And obviously, the oozers all have an opinion on it. But when the locals have an opinion on it, because they're feeling the pressure for those 30 days too, because it almost makes it unhuntable for them for those 30 days.
Yeah, they're not going those 30 days.
Yes.
But there's so much more. So, I mean, again, not to beat the dead horse, we'll harp on that for a whole nother podcast. Yeah. But
house things really quick. I will be at the NWTF this weekend on Saturday the 18th. So I'll be walking around Foulmouth Podcast t-shirt on. Yep. If you see me, say, hey, my dad will be with me. Also, the Hunter's Hindsight blog is up and available on the foulmouthpodcast.com, or you can go to huntershindsight.com as well. There's two published articles on there right now, more to come. Denver is currently writing one that I have to proofread, and he's got some writer's block at the moment, but we'll have some more coming there. Yeah. And
we're at the new podcast studio for right now.
Yes, so this is the new podcast studio.
We're working on it. We don't have our chairs.
It's a bit of an echo. We need some sound panels.
Yeah,
so we're working on that.
But we're excited to be back. We got a lot of exciting things coming this year. We got a lot of work to go to. We ended our season on a high note, like we said. So we're pumped.
It just made me want to go hunt even more.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. So, until next time.
Until next time, catch you boys at the rant.